He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
All right, Harrison, do you have enough time to talk about Marvel and Thrones?
Yeah,
and stuff like
I'm
that?
In.
All right, so that is going to do it for the basketball portion of this show. So to those of you who were just here to hear about the Lakers, that is going to do it. I will talk to you guys on Thursday/Friday.
I might take some Lakers takes in this net. Anthony's just speaking for himself.
That's probably true. Like, there are some Lakers Marvel things that you could
probably be so
here.
Mad when they it's like, Harrison was talking Lakers in that last 20 minutes. He lied to me.
A lot has happened, and I haven't spoken to Harrison about all of this stuff like in a while. And like Acolyte, I find fascinating because I didn't like the vast majority of the show, but I love the Chimere character. Like I love that. Like they finally fully leaned into actually the Jedi suck. Thrones, I think, has been really interesting and really good that they finally leaned into the magical elements. And then in Marvel, you have Robert Downey Jr. back, which I know is probably super cynical if you don't want to think about it at all. But I actually think it's pretty inspired to turn the most popular guy in the history of your cinematic universe into like the best villain that you have to offer.
It's like the classic soap opera trope for $80 million of like, this is his evil twin, you know?
Yeah. So where do you want to start, Harrison? Where Marvel, Thrones, or Star Wars? What do you find the most interesting?
I mean, I think the Marvel thing is the most interesting right now just because of all the sort of possibilities that this opens up, you know, for what does that even look like with him coming back? Is it sort of him just under, like, Doctor Doom doesn't really take off his mask? Like, is it just him under the mask the whole time he's doing a voice? Like, you don't know. It seems like that would be sort of a waste of, like, the potential emotional impact of, like, showing, hey, that guy has the same face as the Tony Stark that we all know and love and that saved our universe. You know, but it's also, you know, that maybe that's the most seamless way to do it. Or is this some sort of evil Tony variant from another universe where it's like, instead of Victor Von Doom, or maybe that's his name in this universe because his parents get killed earlier on by the Winter Soldier, and then he gets adopted by his relatives in Latveria and becomes like a Latverian monarch there and sort of embraces magic and technology as sort of his quest and becomes more evil and cynical, you know, and leans into sort of the impulses that made him create Ultron in terms of becoming controlling and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think that having that guy show up and he just starts beating the crap out of the Avengers is like, that there's some built-in emotional resonance with that, I think, for audiences that you wouldn't have necessarily gotten as much with the Kang thing, and is probably the most seamless way for them to set up stakes and pivot right off the bat when they're like, well, we accidentally wasted a whole phase setting up this guy that we had to fire. And so we're just going to have evil Tony Stark come in and kill the entire arena of him and set him up as the new big bad, because you immediately know, oh shit, like evil Tony Stark, that seems like a pretty bad thing for, you know, for the Avengers. And like,
I mean, he almost, even as good Tony Stark, almost ruined everything with the Sokovia Awards Accords.
And with Ultron. Like, he like on accident as a good guy almost destroyed the world multiple times. Like, think about what he could do if he's intent on it, you know? And it does. Look, it also sets up the opportunity for, like, potentially, like, are we going to see evil versions of the other characters coming from this universe alongside him? Like, does he bring in, like, you know, evil Hydra Cap? Like, is there, you know, like, evil Ant-Man? I don't know. Like,
well, I think one of my favorite cliches is, you know, find me a cynic and it's an idealist who just live too long, you know. Yep. and
that's how I feel.
Like, I think that being Tony is a fascinating, you know, because like I think Tony, right, like he lived long enough to like, and his eyes were open enough to see that, you know, his company was doing enough wrong in the world that he needed to completely change everything. And that kind of person who is capable of that swing can also swing back the other way. And I think the idea of him swinging back the other way, it like the person that we saw Tony lash out the most at was Mr. Clear Eyed, you know, full hearts can't lose Captain America, where, you know, he was like, you told us we were going to lose together. Well, guess what? We did. And, and that character taking that next step to really hold it personally against Captain America and give up on saving stuff and actually go so far as to be Captain America's foible, like that is fascinating to me. That and, is really, you
know,
really
again,
cool.
There's just like, I know that there's a lot of people that are cynical about the business aspect of this. And like, I think there's a degree of that. It's like, they just know Robert Downey Jr. in the MCU sells tickets. Like they know that that is something that people are going to sign up for. And there's, again, like something that people have an expectation of. It's like Deadpool bringing back Hugh Jackman Wolverine. It's like, we know that that's a box office draw. Yes. Like I enjoyed that movie. And like, I think that it was like, I think it was a lot of fun, but also like, I mean, they made that movie got made because they're like, well, we can throw a bag at Hugh Jackman and get him back in theaters, and we know that people are going to suit up for that.
Yeah, we'll make a billion bucks if those two just do stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, I enjoyed the movie, but it's like, it's also, there's a cash grab element of anything like that, and like this is sort of that, but it's also probably the best way they could have possibly pivoted after they're like, well, we accidentally built a whole 2-movie arc around this guy that we had to fire, and there's no chance of us bringing him back. And their options were basically like, hey, it turns out all those Kang variants, there was actually one that didn't look like him that kills all the other ones, and now he's the threat. Or it's, you know, do they set up to the audience, it's like, hey, like Tony Stark with Doctor Strange powers also seems like pretty dangerous. That's an Avengers level threat that we can sort of establish like right away. And I do think that it was probably the smartest way they could have pivoted.
Yeah,
I get why people would be mad from the perspective of like, I wanted to see, you know, actual Victor Von Doom and like, you know, this sort of portrayal. I think we got to wait and see, you know, what this sort of looks like before judging too harshly. But I also like can understand, that's the one part of it that I get is like, Doom on his own is a really compelling villain and you don't need to make him Tony Stark for that. But I think in this case, they sort of had to throw a Hail Mary. And that was like the easiest way to sort of, you know, put those two things together.
The question I would have to the cynics is, do you think this happens if Jonathan Majors doesn't get, you know, convicted of all of the things that he got convicted of? Because if you think so, then okay, then it's fair to be that kind of cynical. If you don't, and this is just a response to that situation, this is them trying to make good on that situation the best way that they know how, you know. And I actually like, I like that the Russo brothers are back. I think they did a phenomenal job with Endgame and with Infinity War. Like, those are two of my favorite movies of all time.
They know how to move action figures around the board as well as anyone.
Yeah. And I, you know, I, to me, this is clearly something that like cannot fail, you know, like like we are not going to live in a world from here on out without comic book movies. If this thing is indeed too big to fail, then I would rather them, you know, do what they feel is actually going to bring people back into the theaters, rather than keep on throwing more and more money at this weird direction that they had taken that wasn't working. Like the thing like with the cynics and all that stuff, it'd be one thing if they like, I would understand frustration if they were saying like, you know, if they were having some success and then they were like, all right, that's cute, but no, here's this guy again, you know.
Yeah.
But that isn't what this, that's not what it's been, you know.
Yeah, you said that it's too big to fail. Like, I actually disagree. I think that this is a Hail Mary to stop it from failing, because I think that there's, on one hand, you know, like this is obviously the first one is going to be a massive box office success just because people are going to be curious about it and want to go. But they're setting up a 2-episode arc. If they are sort of not respectful in the way that they handle this like transition, and people don't like the direction that they're going, and like sort of like, I don't expect them to do this, but if it sort of stomps all over the ending of Endgame, like in a way where it's like people just are not vibing with it and it just seems like a clear cash grab, there's a chance the second one's big enough to fail.
Yeah. The other thing too is that like, I've seen a lot of the criticism come from people who don't have a bunch of background with comic books. And the thing with comic books is there were only so many great characters that all of these people could have come up with. And of course, people had like, they had to replay some of the hits. It's why Joker never, like, Batman's Batman's whole I will never sagas,
you know,
yeah, like, well, like the like the Batman's whole I will not kill spiel is 100% like the creators of Batman saying, like, we created Joker and I don't think we can create a better villain for Batman.
Well, you know, I also like, think it's just like we like if we start having the, you got to remember the standards were different at the time, too, where like they were not going to be allowed to sell the kids if he was like murdering people, you know?
Yeah. Let's move on really quickly to House of the Dragon. Star Wars. Like, I don't know. My quick take,
Acolyte stuff. Like, I thought that the first three episodes were some of the worst television I've ever watched. And then I ended up enjoying the last three episodes a lot. And so, you know, like the lightsaber fights in episode four are some of the coolest, I think, like outside, maybe the coolest outside of, I think, maybe The Last Jedi when Kylo Ren and Rey team up in the throne room is a pretty badass lightsaber fight in terms of choreography. And then obviously Duel of the Fates with, you know, Darth Maul and Anakin and Qui-Gon, like those are probably up there with it, maybe above. But I mean, it was above almost anything else.
Wait, you have that above? Like you have that above Obi against Anakin?
I mean that one, like, I mean, I guess for emotional stakes is like really impact. I just like I don't think it's like the strongest fight that they've ever put together choreography wise.
Huh. I guess I'm more
lightsaber fights featured the different kinds of lightsabers clashing against each other and the different fighting styles. And it was like two guys who had basically taught each other how to fight, like going at each other. And it was like, you know, I mean, it was obviously it's a great fight. Like it's a great ending to the movie. But I the Acolyte was extended episode four lightsaber fight was like probably above it on a technical level.
I really wish they had created Kymer for present day. Like if he could be a present day Sith Lord, well, that would be,
you never know. Star Wars. Anything could happen.
I don't think he can.
Like, yeah. Through the power of,
you're gonna freeze
through the power of money and Disney, all things are possible.
I guess they could technically,
what if, like, he was cloned? Have him
just frozen. I guess cloning. Ugh. Yeah. But like it, there's no way he's learning how to create
life and extend life, you know, and we know that Plagueis doesn't make it because we know Palpatine kills him. Sorry, spoiler alert for anyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't mean that the other guy who learned about, you know, sort of extending life didn't find a way to extend his life longer.
Yeah. I don't know. I like, there's just no way to bring him to present day without getting the eye roll. You know,
Kamir survived. There you go. Exactly. That's the only line of dialogue you need.
Is it Kamir? Is it Kymer? I don't know.
I don't know. Somehow he's still alive.
But that's all you need. Is it a stretch?
They bring back Oscar Isaac just for that line. Like
he's the best creation since. Like he's the best creation since the originals.
Like best new villain probably since, I guess, like Dooku. Dooku's interesting, I think.
Yeah, but like he was mostly interesting just in Clone Wars, right? Like I guess this guy hasn't existed in the movies yet either, so
yeah,
I guess that's fair. But like Dooku was you know purely animated. This guy like is the best. I don't know. This guy was so
character they've done in a long time. Certainly.
Yeah.
Like more interesting than Moff Gideon or like this version of Grand Admiral Thrawn, you know, from Ahsoka, you know, he is like the most interesting villain they've done in quite a while.
Thrawn is good.
Thrawn is a god tier villain. I just like wasn't in love with like the Ahsoka, you know, thing yet.
They
can win me around.
I know I shouldn't be criticizing, but they made Thrawn chubby and
he got older, you know, it's like he was out there in the desert. Like what is he
saying? Bad bottom old like, Thrawn
top shape. Like
what like, else does here? He have to do out there?
I don't know. He's like, they don't have that much food. Well, I guess that they don't have that much food is arguing sort of against my point, but,
let's talk about Thrones.
Maybe the only food they had was like extremely high calorie options. Like it was just really hard to burn it off, you know?
Yeah.
All they had were like really dense protein shakes, you know?
You know, the one thing I'll say to, like, and this involves Thrones too. The thing that I'm really excited about with the Robert Downey Jr. thing is that it's going to progress the story forward.
Yeah.
Right. Like one thing that I think all of these larger IP projects have really run into is that everybody is so afraid to fuck up moving forward that they're so focused on filling in gaps and prequels and all of this stuff. And like,
well, because especially Disney, because they just saw how poorly that can go with the reception of the sequel series. And they're like, well, we're just going to tell you how the people that you like got to be there and play in the time periods that you guys like instead of, you know.
And I like with Robert Downey Jr., I think it allows them to be confident in moving forward. And that's something I'm really excited about. Like the thing with Thrones that I keep on running into is that, like, I know how this ends. And I know
it
that
would be
like
so
everybody
funny if he's just like, I mean, this is not what's going to happen, but if it was just like a Mandarin level misdirect with like Ben Kingsley and they just did the same thing again, they're like, it's Dr. Doom. But then it turns out there's like a real Dr. Doom like behind him. And it's just like he like sort of has, you know, like, you know, gotten like the helpless Tony Stark from his universe to just sort of stand in.
Yeah. Like the Tony Stark who couldn't pass calculus.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like the Thrones thing, and I'm not going to spoil Thrones. I'm not going to say how Dance with Dragons ends or anything like that. But like,
yeah, please do not, because I've not read the book. And so like all of this is new to me.
Well, but like the problem is that like even without spoiling Dance with Dragons, we know that all of these characters that we're talking about, like all of these characters that we're watching in House of the Dragon are dead by the time that Thrones comes around, all of them.
Well,
because this takes place hundreds of years before.
Maybe not before. Owl Girl. I'm forgetting her name, but
Allison.
No, not Allison. Allison.
Well, all of their names are so similar. Did you know that all the Tullys are characters from Sesame Street? Did you know that?
That's actually really funny. I did not realize that. I know that I knew that there were there was a family named after the DuckTales, I remember. But I did not know. I didn't realize that until now. That's very funny, actually.
But so like the thing with House is I love that Condal, the showrunner, compared to Benioff and Weiss, Condal is like way more comfortable going into the magical element of the show, and it makes this show so much more interesting to me than especially late stage Thrones, where it seemed like Benioff and Weiss were like on a mission to kill all magic in that show.
Like the CGI budget's so expensive, and like I don't know, this show about like dragons and magic, like we don't know if people can like understand like an undead lady.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even though so, there's like a whole army of the dead that we're regularly featuring, like, zombie Lady Stoneheart, that's going to be a little too confusing. Like,
it wasn't just that they were like excluding magical elements from Thrones. It was that like once they ran out of book stuff, you could look at all the characters that died at the end of Thrones. It was they killed two of the three dragons.
Yeah, what was the legendary line? I'm like blanking on. He's like, and somehow she forgot to notice the Fifth Fleet or whatever. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah, like they, you know, and like they killed the guys from the rivers, right? That were teaching Bran and getting him through all of that. They killed the children of the forest, like all of the magical elements. They killed. Whereas, like with this show. Huh?
I do not remember that. It's been a while since I watched Thrones.
The Children of the Forest died in the same episode that Summer died. Remember the Hodor episode?
You're right. Okay. Yeah.
It was like everything late Thrones was just like, we're just going to kill all the magic. And this one, I think there's a fair argument to be made that Daemon stayed a little too long in Harrenhal, right? That like I can understand
why
people are frustrated.
Every single time I will tell you that we go there, my wife she's like, oh, we're back in Luigi's fucking mansion again. Like it's
Yeah, like I understand that like people who are kind of fed up and like want that to move forward. Finally, I think it has moved forward.
I think there were a couple episodes there where it's like, okay, cool, he's seeing another hallucination. I get it.
Like, all right, we're good. Fucking his mom, huh? All right. And so like I understand that frustration, but I also love the idea of the old gods fighting the new ones, right? And watching that take place within a character and watching growth result in that character from that fight, like that magical and ideological fight that's taking place. I've loved it. Like I had questions. I didn't love the first season. I didn't think that they needed to spend as much time, with the children version of these characters as they did in the first season. But like this second season, I have thought has been incredible. Like I think we have seen peak Thrones in the season
and like has very little like setup for it and like no sort of any idea of what's coming and anything like that. Like for me, I actually really enjoyed the first half of the last season because I think not only was it well-made television, but it also like for me has given a lot more emotional stakes to, sort of these standoffs between Rhaenyra and Alicent, which would have sort of, I think felt a little bit one note if you hadn't seen them as friends as children.
Oh no, I'm not saying don't spend any time with them as children. I thought we spent like
they set up why Kristen Cole hates her so much and like all this stuff. Like I think it was time well spent.
Well, if you're gonna do that, I would have been fine spending the whole first season with them.
Yeah.
And then maybe at the very end show them as grown up so that you can throw to them in the next season with them grown up and not throw everybody off.
I also think that that's like a big shift to like, between seasons, just be like, hey, we're just recasting everyone that you liked about that show the first time.
Yeah. No, I think there's some show running aspects of it.
Yeah.
The other thing too is like, I don't think they're getting enough credit for what they're doing with the dragons themselves. The dragons themselves, like in terms of like the voicing of the dragons and
I don't know if you listen to the official dragons. Game of Thrones podcast with Jason Concepcion and Greta Johnson, but like it's they had the sound designer on there for the dragons who's been doing it since Game of Thrones, and like her talking about her like process of getting the sounds is sort of incredible. Like some of it is a little bit digitally altered, but most of it is just like combining different animal sounds that she captured at like a family zoo out in like a wilderness retreat and stuff like that to like
give Matt them Damon all different... zoo. She like yeah
she bought a zoo, or her family did, and
yeah, I have loved this season. I'm the only thing, like, I wish this wasn't this upcoming Sunday, wasn't the season finale, because of, like, I wish we had two more episodes of this. I think this is the last season because of how societally and in terms of viewership, how successful this show has been. I think they'll go back to 10 episode arcs.
They might be, the WB cancels everything now. They might turn this off.
No way. No way. Absolutely, I thought that's
what, is that not what you're saying?
No, I'm saying, I'm saying this. No, I'm saying this is the last season with 8 episodes rather than 10.
Okay, because I mean, you put in the possibility that David Zasloff was going to be like, well, the show is expensive, and like we could just do more, like Dance Moms.
Nah, I don't think even Zasloff, I think, is not that stupid. Like even Zasloff would not.
It feels like a lot. You're talking about here's our Laker point. You're talking about like we shouldn't, give people too much bail or like assume that they're not capable of like terrible decisions and making That's things true. Worse or whatever. It's like this is the guy who was like he's like master negotiator was like, I don't think we need the NBA.
Yeah.
Publicly.
I think they went back and found quotes from the head of NBC at the time, and that's just what presidents of TV companies say when they lose stuff, is that they didn't feel they needed it.
Sure, but this is before they lost it. It was like when it was potentially on the table, and he's like, well, I don't know, maybe drive the price down. And then the NBA
they got from NBC was during those negotiations.
Yeah.
Like when whoever the head of NBC was, when NBC lost it, that was what they were saying at the time of the negotiations. And that's when everybody realized, NBC is
publicly in the social media era, when you're dealing with like a league of like highly competitive people and like, you know, highly petty people. And there's like, you know, it's not like just business decisions, it's personal decisions. And
Can I give a hot take? We're late enough into this, and you know, if you're still listening, I'm probably not going to get canceled for this.
Oh God. All right. Well,
I think
I'm not giving you permission. That was not me signing off on your take. I'm just not leaving the show.
I think that the NBA got fed up with the way that Turner and the way that the inside the NBA guys specifically were covering the NBA.
I think there's an aspect of that for sure.
I think they got really sick of Chuck and Shaq specifically telling everybody every Thursday night on the biggest platform that the NBA has to offer that isn't a specific game, that they don't watch the product that the NBA is hoping to grow. And I think
I will say to the NBA, though, be careful what you wish for, because it's like if you get people that are just propagandists on there, like I don't know that like resonates with people in the same way.
Oh, sure. Like, I think there's risk involved, but
I have non-sports friends who like send me inside the NBA clips because they enjoy them, you know,
but like, I don't know. I never thought that inside the NBA was doing any service to the NBA specifically. I've always thought that they were only doing a service to themselves by being,
you may be right,
an objectively great show. Like it was a really good, entertaining and funny show. It just also didn't give a single flying fuck about the NBA, which if I was the NBA, I'd be like, I kind of want our biggest show to care about
that. That is probably more of a factor than people are like either realizing or wanting to admit, because we all have these positive nostalgic feelings for inside the NBA, but it's like the NBA may not necessarily feel as much that way. I mean, we've seen that with how much players have complained about it in like recent years. You know, like I'm sure Adam Silver like does not enjoy that they're up there and they're like, yeah, you know, the game's not as good as it used to be. He's trying to negotiate a TV deal.
Right. And look, Adam Silver was putting pressure on ESPN for the way that they cover the sport too. Like, I think we're going to see some big changes there.
Yeah. Adam Silver's got his Arya Stark kill list, and it's like Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson out, Charles Barkley and Shaq out, you know?
Yeah. I
don't think that moving from Turner necessarily gets rid of like Charles Barkley. Like somebody's going to hire, like Amazon's going to hire Charles Barkley, you know? And so you're not getting him like off your airwaves.
I don't think Amazon will be allowed to hire Charles Barkley. That's not informed, but I don't think
like somebody's going to.
No, but I don't think a league partner. I don't think the NBA wants Charles Barkley.
I cannot imagine that they would put that in writing anywhere ever.
No, I don't. Well, no, that I don't think they would put it in writing. But I think Adam Silver would. You know, hey, can we not? He did it with the Van Gundys with ESPN.
That's
he did
lower stakes, both though. Van Those guys are not air. As beloved as Charles Barkley
the
NBA institution.
By the way, I think Charles Barkley would be more entertaining if he wasn't part of a league part, like if he wasn't affiliated with a league partner. I'm not saying that Charles Barkley isn't going to be employed next year. I just don't think that he is going to be employed beyond next year, because he's going to be on TNT next year. But I think, and by the way, it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of damage he does in that relationship too, because we know that he is willing to fly off of the handle. And we know that last night,
going to be must watch.
It is. It 100% is. But again, for not reasons that if I was the NBA, I would really want. Like, I don't know if I want that noise. I'm thinking about this from like a PR perspective, and I'm like, I don't know.
You have an opening for an analyst on this show, I think. Charles Barkley, come on down, Lakers Lounge.
Man, could you imagine the things he would say about the Lakers on this show? Especially if I get him going,
voting him up, you know?
Yeah. Charles, the reason it's they like didn't evil do this Ernie is Johnson. Because Linda like, Rambis just, like, didn't like, think it was Ernie a good Johnson's idea.
Johnson's like trying to rein him in and keep him from getting fired, and like you're like, no, Chuck, keep going, you got this.
Chuck, is your cup filled over there? I don't think it is.
Yeah.
All right. I would let him cook.
Like Ernie Johnson's like, we got to go to commercial break. You're like, no, Charles, I think you got some good points on the upcoming election. Fire away. Let's go.
Oh, no, I would not have. No. Oh, God. On that note, I've taken up way too much of your time, even if it's right before you head out on vacation. Thank you very much, Harrison, for hopping on and talking about all of this stuff. This was a really fun wandering conversation, which is kind of what we shoot for here. A reminder, please do follow all of Harrison's and everybody who works for Harrison's work over there at SB Nation.
If I can jump in for a second, this is probably the worst time to plug this. Is an hour and a half in when we're probably like down to like the last remaining members of the audience. We have 1,500 people watching right now. Hey, look, you're the real ones that are still sticking around. I will say, I am now the associate director of pro basketball at SB Nation, so new title. And we also have brought on a new WNBA writer in Noah Dalzell, who's at NOADALZELL on Twitter. She is going to be covering the NBA, WNBA full time, as well as continuing on some of her Celtics beat stuff. And so, like, if you enjoy the I know that probably just like unsold Lakers fans, but if you care about the WNBA, if you want to follow and be informed on the WNBA, you need to follow Noah. She's a rising star, and I'm really excited that we have her aboard now doing stuff for us full time.
No, people like when Sabrina comes on here and talks about the W and talks.
No. I'm saying Noah is a Celtics fan. So, you know, just get past that for your audience. You know, hey, look, I get it, you know, but like I hate the Celtics more than anything. And I like her.
She likes Peyton Pritchard a little too much is all I'm saying.
I mean, she's not, I respect it. She's not backing down from the all-star potential thing.
Noah does great work. SB Nation has done some interesting things here recently, and I'm excited for you. Congratulations on the promotion. That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Thank you very much.
In my mind, I think.
Totally.
Yeah. That was the case that I made, at least. I was like, well, there's no one here that's more deserving of this.
Look, we know they make nothing but the best decisions every step of the way, every single time they make a decision. So, like,
every decision they've ever made.
Please do hit subscribe, though, to the channel here at youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you guys are listening to this in podcast form, please do hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcasts, preferably on Odyssey. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your evening. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you on Friday.